Ready?
I was born ready.
I can honestly say that's the best news I've heard all day.
Joe Torti Show.
Kind of reminded me of a dark, gothic Neil Diamond.
That's like exactly what I'm going for.
This is the Joe Torti Show.
What show are you listening to?
Joe Torti Show.
I'm trying to be patient, but you're making it incredibly difficult.
I could say big loud things. I could be demonstrative.
Can we just end this already?
Now it's time. The Joe Torti Show.
Yes, it is. What's going on, Philadelphia? Joe Torti here with you, 97.5. The Fanatic, hope that you're having an awesome evening, just like the Flyers, who get the big response game that they needed against the Florida Panthers. Put the tough one in Brooklyn behind them and wrap things up against Florida by a decisive score. Carter Hart, I had to, you know, thought I had to clean my ears out when I heard them say, Tim Saunders and Steve Coates, that Carter Hart won for the first time in 3 months on the road. But 6-2 against the Cats, pretty good way to do it. And the Flyers also chase Sergei Bobrovsky, which, you know, you hate to see it as a former Flyer, but if it has to happen, at least it is the Flyers actually doing it. You did see a variety of goal scorers in today's game, and James Van Riemsdyk with a goal and an assist as well. You got a whole lot, a goal and two assists, rather. A whole lot of good stuff for the Flyers in their win over the Florida Panthers. Taking a look, we mentioned on the Flyers post-game show that the Colorado Avalanche currently lead the Washington Capitals. As it stands right now, Philadelphia with 71 points in 58 games played, currently tied with the Columbus Blue Jackets and a point behind the New York Islanders. The Pittsburgh Penguins and Washington Capitals in the top two spots of the Metropolitan Division. The Capitals at 77 points and the Penguins at 74. However, both of those teams have played more, or fewer rather, games than the Flyers. They do have more games in hand, so good stuff overall by the Flyers. They're now 32-19-7 on the year for the total of 71 points. So impressive stuff by the Orange and Black. Big response in what could have been kind of a letdown situation. Although in the long season, the way that you've seen hockey players go through it, and this group in particular over the years, if you thought that there were going to be lingering effects from that kind of heartbreaker at the end of the game against the Islanders, definitely had another thing coming. In this game, they came out and played big-time hockey over the Florida Panthers. We're hanging out until midnight. We've got an abbreviated show here. And Tyler Zuli's producing. He's done an outstanding job. I found out that Tyler Zuli, you know how like sometimes people will do thons, you know, whether it's, you know, phone-a-thons or stream-a-thons or whatever, where they try to go for like 20 hours. Tyler's halfway through 24 straight hours at the radio station. So, Tyler, we're rooting for you. Great
work. I don't know if it's that much, but it was a good day.
Oh, yeah. You get to go home at 10:30 tomorrow morning. So
I'll probably be back here at about 11 tomorrow morning.
Just hang in there. Appreciate the hard work. And we're going to have some fun tonight. There's a lot of stuff that I want to get to. There's a lot of stuff that we still have to talk about. There's a ton with the Sixers. There's a ton with the Eagles. There are people that are talking about the Eagles potentially poaching not one, but two big-time free agents from a division rival. Got to get to that. Kind of interesting when you look at the way that the team could improve next year, given that they do have some salary cap space to work with and some clearly defined needs. Of course, there's always something to talk about with your Philadelphia 76ers, who are now in the All-Star break. No Damian Lillard in the All-Star three-point shooting contest, and he is experiencing a groin injury. Devin Booker is in. So, I mean, I don't know why you'd think that, like, for example, Matisse Thybulle would be in instead of Devin Booker. But if you're viewing it as another snub for All-Star weekend for the Sixers, I don't get it. But we do have open phone lines for you at 610-632-0975. If you were watching the Flyers game, if you were listening, obviously we can take your reaction right here as well. I do want to get to this stuff with the Philadelphia Eagles, though. And Chris, I know that you're on the line. We'll get to you in a matter of moments here. There are articles and blogs and things like that that have linked the Eagles to Amari Cooper for quite some time. And I mean, dating back to the middle of the season, quite some time. And of course, it makes sense. There's an obvious tie there when it comes to a need to weaken an opponent in the division, also to bolster an area of weakness for you, right? Anytime that you can double dip that way, make an opponent worse, make yourself better, makes sense. My, I don't want to call it disdain because that's not fair, but my thought that Amari Cooper is totally overrated as a wide receiver has been well documented. You look back to his game logs, week-to-week performance in Oakland, that is kind of like the biggest thing where he'd have a 200-yard game or like a 15-yard game. Don't need that. Was much more consistent, however, in Dallas. However, there's another series of posts that I've seen. One of them coming from Section 215, which is a fan-cited blog, talking about the issues that the Eagles have gone through in terms of their draft mistakes and things like that. Well, in this case, it calls for Byron Jones to be free agent priority number one for the Philadelphia Eagles. And it would almost undo a mistake that the Eagles made, according to some people, drafting Eric Rowe instead of Byron Jones, right? You had Rowe kind of playing opposite Byron Maxwell. Meanwhile, Byron Jones was a combine guy, and his projection at the top level was kind of murky. Not quite sure how things would go. The Cowboys do have a ton of cap space, right? So you know that some of that, though, is going to be tied up in Dak Prescott. Franchise tag, big deal, whatever it is. Amari Cooper, who knows? Byron Jones, who knows? Kind of interesting. Here's my question for you. And it sounds ridiculous, but hear me out. In the wake of what happened with Orlando Scandrick, and there are people that talked about Scandrick being a mole or a spy. I don't think that's what it is. I think when you get released from your job, naturally you get a little bit bitter towards the place that released you. I think that Scandrick did not like the way that Howie Roseman released him and, his role on the team, and he's out and then he's back and then he's out again. And then he's on TV talking about how much of a mess the Eagles are, right? Do you want Cowboys in the locker room? Like, does it matter to you? I've talked about this. I think that it could be a good thing if you weaken the other team and strengthen your team, right? Like in the case of Amari Cooper. Certainly Byron Jones I would like more than any of the Eagles' current cornerback crop as well. But I do think that it runs deep. I mean, when you talk about Cowboys Week and the absolute hatred that flows towards the star, I think that we've already crossed the bridge of, all right, marginal players are not going to be a part of what we do again. Orlando Scandrick was a bottom of the roster player in both Dallas and Philadelphia, as it were. So I don't think that they'll take that risk again. But what about a guy like Byron Jones, who could be your top corner, or Amari Cooper, who, despite my lack of faith in his long-term production as a number one receiver, would probably be your best guy at this point? Are you interested? Or does the idea that he played for Dallas, is that impossible to wash off? Is that impossible to get away from? Because for me, when I look at it, I want to see this team win immediately. So on the surface, adding talent is something that is very attractive to me. However, there is something to be said for the chemistry, the locker room. Is there any idea that the Cowboys rivalry could throw a wrench in things here? And is that something that the Eagles should consider? Obviously, they're always going to consider locker room fit. But is something like that a factor as Howie Roseman continues negotiations. And before you say that I'm grasping at straws, which, granted, I will give you, if I were in your shoes just sitting here listening right now, I would say the same thing. However, I haven't submitted all of the evidence. Because another crucial bit of evidence is when the Eagles were in a similar situation, when you had the opportunity to land one of the Cowboys' top players in a big-time area of need for you, DeMarco Murray. And it was clear just about from Jump Street that that whole thing didn't work. Now, you can say it's because Chip Kelly didn't use him properly. All I know is that things are so different between the locker rooms of the Dallas Cowboys and the Philadelphia Eagles that I don't know if it's reconcilable. I don't know if you've been in one that you could stand being in the other one. I'm not saying that there's never been any crossover between the teams, right? You've seen linemen getting swapped from one side to the other and back again sometimes. However, overall, you just don't see a whole lot of crossover, especially in recent history. And when it has happened, it hasn't worked out all that well for the Eagles. 610-632-0975 is your phone number to hop aboard the conversation. Let's go right to the phones with Chris in Williamstown on 97.5 The Fanatic. Good evening, Chris. Chris, you with us?
DeMarco Murray.
Hey, man.
Don't ever bring up DeMarco Murray because that's such a horrible comparison, bro.
Why?
You know, because just like you kind of contradicted yourself by saying, I know Chip Kelly didn't use him right. No.
Chip Kelly didn't make him get on the plane and talk to the owner like he could do to Jerry Jones.
And it still didn't do anything. Change Chip Kelly, so at the end of the day, it didn't do nothing. So, but the fact that he actually stepped up and said something, my gosh, look at the Sixers and all the players that stepped up and said, anyway, I'm going way off the beaten path. All right, so, you know, fair to say that it goes Eagles, Sixers, Phillies, Flyers in the 4-4 standings, right?
For a lot of people, I think so, yes.
Well, see, if the Phillies, which I don't think it's that way for me, it's Eagles, Phillies, because I think the Phillies got a lot to go for them this year, especially. I think it goes Eagles, Phillies, Sixers, only because we've been to the playoffs. We've been, you know, let down 2 years in a row. You know, Joe, if they don't go anywhere further than the NBA Finals, I'm going to say, you know, that's 3 years in a row that we've been screwed out of being what we should have been, which is the best team in the league. Forget LeBron and the Lakers. This was a team with Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid and all these assembling kids that were supposed to be either good on defense or good on offense, mm-hmm. and never has one of them panned out.
Well, I mean, what do you mean by panned out? Like, I assume that you mean, like, winning a championship. But, like, back-to-back 50-win seasons is, you know, that's major progress compared to where the Sixers were, right?
Well, but see, okay. So you were don't go away from playoff, from going to overtime. But still, the fact that it happened, hey, let the chips fall where they may. The Flyers, for some reason, you know, the seeds have been planted, whether it was like a Chip Kelly kind of thing where, you know, he all the trades that he made led up to, you know, Nick Foles, to Sam Bradford, to Carson Wentz. Like, you know, for some reason, I think the Phillies team is kind of like, you know, like the past two seasons, I didn't think they had anything going. You know, after the halfway point, they fall up. After the first quarter, they fall off. Like, you know, for some reason, the fact that they fire Gabe Kapler, I feel more inspired about the Phillies than I do about my Sixers at this point.
Super interesting, Chris. Thanks for the phone call, man. Appreciate you leading off the show strong. I would say that Chris's feeling is probably the inverse of a lot of Phillies fans over the last 3 years. Now, I know that there are some, like Tyler, I know for you, for example, were not somebody who got super amped about the Phillies' chances last year or the year before, right? So I think that generally speaking, though, there were a lot of fans, especially after the Bryce Harper signing, that felt much better, and those same fans don't feel as good this year. It's more of like a, you know, show-me kind of situation for the Phillies.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are feeling like this today the way that I felt this time last year, even with the Harper signing, and I know that was a little later down the line, but I just looked at the team not as a one guy addition, which is great, but a 25 man roster, and I just go they're not good enough.
Yeah,
and I look at them again and I say they're not good enough.
Yeah, I do have to push back on Chris's point though regarding pretty much everything. Whether you like Chip Kelly or not, your players can't go to the owner if they have an issue. I've read an article about the Sixers, and if you don't like the mentality of the Sixers, you should have a problem with them partying with the ownership group and like having that kind of relationship with the ownership group, because it kind of just whoop cuts Brett Brown right out of the situation, right? So for those who are parents, I experience this all the time. My daughter goes to my parents for stuff, and I'm not saying my parents are the boss of me. But I'm also not saying that, okay? I'm 30, still got bosses everywhere. What do I do? I'm supposed to have a relationship with my daughter where I kind of dictate the rules. What you eat, what you don't eat, when you take a bath, all that other kind of stuff, right? If there's a different set of rules that exist because I get circumvented and you go to the grandparents, then all of a sudden we've got anarchy. If the Sixers are partying with the ownership group and getting hooked up with concert tickets and stuff like that and partying, and all of a sudden, say, Brett Brown has an issue with Ben Simmons or Joel Embiid or any of these guys, whoop, just go right around Brett Brown and be like, all right, what do you think? You think it's not toxic? It killed the Patriots. It killed the Patriots dynasty. Tom Brady has a conversation with Bill Belichick. Hey, this Jimmy G guy is too good, and I'm going to be around for a little while. I want him gone. No, Tom. It's a guy that I drafted. I nailed the draft pick. You just live with it. Okay. All right. That's how it's going to be, Bill. Hey, Robert Kraft, what do you think about this situation? I'm not happy. Then Robert Kraft steps in, Jimmy Garoppolo gets shipped to the West. Now there's no succession plan for New England. Tom Brady's pissed anyway at Bill Belichick. The whole thing falls apart. Anytime that there is player, owner, partnership, friendship, interaction outside of the realm of the head coach and the GM being more or less filters before you get up to the owner, the whole thing doesn't work. If you were to go to the executive vice president of your company and your boss is not the executive vice president, and you go to your EVP for your issues, first of all, it does look kind of amateurish on your part. But second of all, it also undermines the authority of your boss. It's not a good thing. It's not a good thing for the ecology of a locker room or a team or an organization. So if you don't think that that's a problem or a big deal, just look at how well it's worked out. People laugh at Jerry Jones, Daniel Snyder, and all these guys who are down on the field and talking to players and getting their hands in everything. It's not okay just because it happens here every once in a while. 610-632-0975. Dan, you're going to lead us off, and then it can be you. We do have wide open phone lines. It's the Joe Torti Show on 97.5 The Fanatic.
Joe Torti on 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
97.5 The Fanatic.
Welcome back, Joe Torti Show. 97.5 The Fanatic. Hanging out until midnight. Tyler Zuli is producing this evening's program. Want to remind you, of course, about the Fanatic deal of the week. This week only, get $50 worth of gift cards to the Philly Pretzel Factory for $25. Gift cards are valid at all locations and perfect for satisfying that salty craving or for your next party tray. Hurry, supplies are limited. Purchase at 975thefanatic.com. Keyword, deal. Is it a big deal when players, for example, talk to owners and hang out with owners and stuff like that? I think it depends. Now you're celebrating a Super Bowl. Jeffrey Lurie's dancing in the locker room. What possible harm could come from this? DeMarco Murray's not satisfied with the role that he has in the offense and the way that he's being deployed, and he talks to Jeffrey Lurie on the team plane. Bigger problem. And so here's why. I don't think that DeMarco Murray's a problem child. I think that if you're getting players from Dallas, they think that they can just go and talk to the owner if they have issues. First of all, Jason Garrett was never going to have a problem with that to begin with. Jason Garrett was always just like, you know, the clapper, happy to be here. But it is something to consider when you're weighing, looking at, I don't know, Amari Cooper or Byron Jones in free agency. Are they going to be able to gel with the locker room? Are things just too different? Do you want anybody from Dallas in your locker room? The Orlando Scandrick thing really didn't work out. Dan in North Philly's next on the Fanatic. Hey, Dan.
Hey, Joe. How you doing, buddy?
Doing great. How are you?
Great show.
Thank you.
Here goes my reaction to that. Just give me 1 second, guys. All right, for instance, Fletcher Cox is with Mr. Lurie, and them two are having a drink. The whole team's there, per se. Mm-hmm. Just like you said, right? So, Fletch says to Mr. Lurie, hey, Mr. Lurie, you know, in small talk, Mr. Lurie says to him, hey, Fletch, I just want to let you know, when I sign your check, you're my happy. I smile the most because I know I'm getting my value's worth. So, anyway, he says, thank you. Fletch turns around and says to Mr. Lurie, I wish Jim Schwartz would blitz a little more. So, in essence, he's telling Jeffrey Lurie the business of the day, right?
Right.
That's Mr. Lurie's responsibility not to repeat that. He's telling them that in a social atmosphere. Or that means to tell you, if he takes Fletch's word, that means Jim Schwartz really is replaceable. You know what I'm saying?
Fair enough. Yep, I'm with you so far. So I guess what I'm at, is that appropriate?
Yeah. Well, here's what I'm saying. It's an inappropriate on Jeffrey Lurie's stand.
Okay.
Either he needs to take care of that nonchalantly, or tell. But if he tells Jim Schwartz, that means he lost the confidence in Fletcher Cox.
Sure, of course, yeah. If he's saying it in the social setting, absolutely.
So, when you're in a social setting like that, hey, if Tyler said to you, Joe, you had a great show, I'm taking you out for beers, and all of a sudden Joe's boss is there, and you're telling the boss, listen, there's some things Joe could be doing a little better. But, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. I do to a degree, because, I mean, you know, I'm not Tyler's boss, but, like, I hear what you're saying.
You got Tyler being your boss.
Right, well, yeah, I would say that Tyler's definitely my boss. Dan, thanks for the phone call, man. Appreciate it. I would say that's absolutely
correct.
Well,
that's simply correct. Not true.
Let's address Dan's point, because he raises an interesting question. Yeah. Like, is it the same? Like, just saying, hey, by the way, you know, between the two of us, I feel some certain way about a member of the team. Is that different than DeMarco Murray going up to Jeffrey Lurie on the plane and being like, I'm pissed, and he says, why? Have a seat.
I don't know. I initially want to say no, or initially want to say yes, it's different, because we are regular people. They are multimillion-dollar athletes with, you know, recognizable faces and brands and all that good stuff. But what's the difference between that conversation unfolding on the airplane or that conversation unfolding in our boss's office?
Right. Yeah, there isn't one really.
You know, and I don't necessarily think, like, especially if it wasn't malicious. Like, if I went to one of our bosses and said, this is what I think Joe could do better,
mm-hmm.
in a totally unmalicious, not undercutting way, me not trying to take your job, me not, you know, whatever, I don't know if it's any different.
Right. Well, so when I look at it, I don't know if in a pro sports setting it's possible. Like, I don't even know if it's possible to say something innocent. Like, if you've covered, for example, I covered minor league baseball. So there, I would say there's much more access between front offices of minor league baseball teams and players versus, like, Derek Jeter going out with the front office staff of the Yankees. You know, like, I don't think that that happens that often. You hear things, and people talk about, you know, other players or coaches or whatever, and it's like it's impossible to not see it through that lens. It's like an earwig where it just gets in, and you literally can't see anything other than, oh, you know, this guy said that this guy dogs plays at third base all the time or whatever. You know what I mean? I don't know if it's possible for Fletcher Cox to be like, well, you know what? In my perfect world, Jim Schwartz blitzes a little bit more, you know? And I don't know if it's possible for Jeffrey Lurie to put that out of his mind, or every game in a big spot where Jim Schwartz isn't blitzing, he's like, you know what? Fletcher said that. And you know what I mean? Like, so I don't know if it's possible to be innocent in that setting and, like, have something just be rolling off your back when an owner of a football team has so much power. I don't know if I want Amari Cooper being in here for 5 minutes and talking about the way that the Eagles are run. You know, I don't know if I want Byron Jones thinking that he could go to Jeffrey Lurie and say, hey, you know what, in Dallas we did it this way and we had some success. I don't know if I'm comfortable with that.
So, and again, let me ask you, because I am starting to feel more and more that it's very similar. What's the key difference? What's the component that would not be missing in our job or in any person, regular person's job, that's missing in a professional athlete's job?
So, the message truly depends, right? So if you were to go to our boss and say, I think that Joe could do this better on his show, conceivably that's coming from a teamwork, constructive criticism, like, I'm not the one to say this to Joe, why don't you say this to Joe kind of situation. Like, for example, people that are talking about, we talk about like Chip Kelly changing his scheme. I said, why? Like, that's why he was hired. He was hired because there's no reason that he would ever even consider changing that scheme. That's why. I just feel like people are tied much more to what they do. It's not to say that coaches and players can't have improvement and constructive criticism and things like that. What I'm saying is I don't think that at that level, triangulation ever helps. Like, if you're Fletcher Cox, you should be able to talk to Jim Schwartz. You should be able to talk to whoever you need to talk to in order to get messages across, whether it's about players' performances, coaches' performances, whatever. When you bring in somebody who's not directly in that line, like, I think that does make a difference. Like, the equivalent would be, Tyler, like, not if you went to Coach Camille to talk about, you know, what I'm doing. It'd be like if you went to the head of Beasley to be like, hey, by the way, you know, this guy, first of all, it's like, well, I have people that handle this. And second of all, you know, this seems strange. There's like a line of succession. There's a power structure that you're supposed to go to. And I just think it's different here in Philadelphia relative to the way that it is in Dallas. And I think that that could create potentially some issues. You know, I look at it with the Sixers. I'm not saying that I love Brett Brown as a coach. I'm saying it is impossible for people to be like, man, Brett Brown needs to get into these guys when they're like sitting courtside with Michael Rubin, like hanging out and like they're, you know, living it up, the ownership lifestyle with an NBA player. Like, you know, I don't know. I just don't think that it's possible for Brett Brown to be like, you guys got to give me 110%. Buzz off, dude. You serious? I've got concert tickets later with Michael Rubin, with your boss. Get out of here. This thing, it undermines the credibility of organizations. Let's go to Mike and Ben Salem next on 97.5 The Fanatic. Hey, Mike.
Hey, Joe. Thanks for having me. Appreciate the call.
Welcome aboard.
Hey, I just wanted to talk about the Sixers, kind of where they were last year.
Sure.
When they acquired Tobias Harris, kind of how where they are now and then where they are moving forward. So, like, looking back, it's kind of tough to think that it was, I mean, I guess you could say it was a bad trade given that we didn't get to the finals and win, but looking how close we were with Toronto and how that turned out with the Raptors in the finals. Just wanted to get your thoughts on, you know, had we kept Landry Shamet and had a little bit more liquidity going into the offseason, how do you think that would have played out? Where do you think we would have spent that money? And do you you think would probably be better off right now?
Well, so here's what I say, Mike. When it comes to Tobias Harris, I actually don't have any problem with Tobias Harris, the player. My problem is when you're going through 10-win seasons and you're going through all of the garbage that the Sixers went through, I just never thought that Tobias Harris was going to end up being your third figure with Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid. Like, I just had much higher aspirations than that, whether it was LeBron or Kawhi or whoever. You know, it's not fair to Tobias Harris. It's not his fault that he's not those guys. But I am underwhelmed overall by what the final product from all of those years of losing's been.
Sure, yeah, completely agree. It's not a fault of Tobias's either, but I think just because Jimmy decided to leave, it kind of strapped us in a sense. So it kind of brings me up to my next point. I mean, now that we have Tobias, Simmons, and Embiid, we're still okay moving forward, but we kind of lost a lot of our assets. And what would you like to see them do moving forward as far as if they can pursue any moves, if any? And also, what do you think more, what is likely to happen? Like, for example, say we go to the second round, we lose and Brett Brown's fired. Do you think that that would benefit us, moving forward long term? Do you think it would be better to kind of make a trade, in the off season, say we lose and he doesn't get fired? What do you think would be better off?
Mike, thanks for the phone call, man. Appreciate it. Here's what I'll say about that. I think that any result other than the Eastern Conference Finals results in a Brett Brown exit. I think that there's no way that he survives anything short of that. When it comes to moves, to be honest with you, I'm a little bit curious about the moves that they've already made. Like, I want to see how it works with Glenn Robinson and Alec Burks, and I want to see Matisse Thybulle's development over the second half of the season and things like that. So I don't know. First of all, they don't have a ton of liquidity at the moment. Like you said earlier, that's a great word for what the Sixers don't have at the moment. I would like to see what it looks like now with these guys kind of adapting and becoming more acclimated to the system and everything like that. So long term, I do think that it's a good thing if the Sixers make a change from Brett Brown, if they don't make it to the Eastern Conference Finals, because as long as the roster is going to continue to change and they continue to bring in people and rotate through and try to figure out this piece, no, it's this piece, no, it's Jimmy, no, it's Robert Covington and Dario Saric, no, you know what I mean? Like, it just over and over and over again, it seems like we've gotten roster turnover. If you don't have a coach who's going to be able to maximize talent, then I think that you do have some issues there. I'm not saying that it's all his fault, but you have a large enough sample size, as far as I'm concerned, to look at it and think, well, we could do a little bit better. 610-632-0975. Scott, you're going to lead us off. And then we have wide open phone lines. It's the Joe Torti Show, 97.5 The Fanatic.
Joe Torti on 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
It's 97.5 The Fanatic.
Joe Torti Show, 97.5. The Fanatic hanging out until midnight. Tyler Zuli producing this evening. Let's, before we get to Scott, just ask you, Tyler, because we've gone down this the ownership rabbit hole, and can the cultures mix between what it's like to be a Dallas Cowboy and what it's like to be a Philadelphia Eagle. Let's put all that on the back burner for a second. You interested in either Amari Cooper or Byron Jones anyway, like regardless?
Yes. Oh, very much interested in Byron Jones.
Okay.
Very much interested.
Amari Cooper?
I'm not as anti-Amari Cooper as you are. Like, I know you hate the boomer bust type receiver. So I don't think I'm as anti-Amari Cooper, but I don't know if... I look at the draft and it's too talented and too deep to spend that kind of money on, you know, Cooper when I could spend that money on T. Higgins, who is the same exact player, in my opinion.
Fair, fair.
And I don't even think they draft Higgins. I think that they go a different receiver in the first round if he's there. But I look at the draft, and it's so good receiver-wise. I would take a shot there first.
I've been trying to figure out who the Eagles are going to take here. Because, I mean, we're set up to be disappointed. The one that everybody wants is Henry Ruggs. Henry Ruggs is going to be a top 12 player at the absolute stone-cold worst once he runs at the combine. So that's not going to happen. Clemson dudes work. T. Higgins, that'd be cool. Justin Jefferson, people are way down on Justin Jefferson. I think Justin Jefferson would be just fine.
He might slip into the second round.
That's what I keep hearing. I'm just trying to find what Pac-12 wide receiver is going to
there
be the selection.
Is. That's the right conference.
Oh, man.
This one won't disappoint you.
No, this one will definitely work. Definitely work. So there's the one that I saw was, and I feel bad, I don't know this guy's name. I haven't.
LaVisca Chenault?
Nope, I know him. He's good. Brandon Ayuk from Arizona State.
Oh, yes. Also very highly touted. And not
a late riser.
Yeah, not a household name.
No, not a household name. But has been tied to the Eagles for obvious reasons. I don't know if I can say another Pac-12 wide receiver.
Here's the issue.
I can't do it.
If they end up drafting, because all we do is talk about they need a burner, they need a 4-3 guy, they need a guy to take the top off the defense.
Uh-huh.
If they draft Darius Hayward Bay 2.0, we're going to lose our minds.
I don't agree. I hope that they
just draft a burner for a burner's sake.
They won a Super Bowl that way. Torrey Smith stunk. Gave you nothing. But you had a speed receiver, caught the pass off Keanu Neal's knee, and you win the Super Bowl. Don't have it next year with Mike Wallace. Don't have it the year after that with DeSean Jackson being injured, and the whole offense gets compressed and messed up. I'm not convinced that they need anyone good on the other side. I'm convinced they need someone fast. Draw pass interference flags.
You're going to pay $9 million for a guy that can run?
Listen, man.
Can we just call Usain Bolt up if that's the case?
I'd love that. That'd be awesome. Scott and Barrington's next on The Fanatic. What's going on, Scott?
Brother Joe, what's going on, man? Long time.
Yeah, where you been, man?
Just working a lot. Got engaged on Thanksgiving.
Oh, congratulations, man. That's awesome.
Thank you, man. Yeah, I just started working a shop right now. Got a nice little job at the Flyers practice facility. So I'm liking both jobs.
Fantastic, man. Awesome.
I got to apologize to your producer. I'm going to do a little Flyers talk and then my Phillies talk, if I may.
Yeah, of course.
Brother Joe, seeing those guys up close, and I'm not even going to pretend to be a hockey, but seeing those guys up close and personal, working, seeing them in practice, have fun, respect. My question to you is, it seems like, you know, they're doing what most Philly teams should do, veterans and young players. But my question to you is, what do you think they're lacking to really make that playoff push for that, you know, that Stanley Cup?
You know what it is? I think that the secondary scoring has been asked to become their top scoring because of the Lindblom situation and everything that went on there. They were in much better shape, I would argue, at the beginning of the year from a top-to-bottom standpoint than they are now. I wish that, obviously, for a lot of reasons, that Oscar Lindblom was healthy, but I think that's kind of like the thing that's missing. If they get more top-tier scoring talent and kind of have everybody slotted properly beneath, I think that makes more sense.
Yeah, those, and again, I'm not going to pretend, but what I've seen, and I actually went to a game last month, me and my boys, and man, look, brothers, we had a great time, but.
Awesome.
I for years and years, and again, I'm not a hockey person. I'll say it to him blue in the face, Brother Joe, saying they needed their Carter Hart and Elliott. Man, that's a nice two combo right there, but, I have fine respect for those guys and what I see, man. But
we'll make a hockey fan out of you yet, Scott. I'm there.
I'm supposed to be going to a game next weekend with my boys.
Nice.
Steve, but
good
last
work.
But not least, Brother Joe, I'm again. Love you, man. Love, enjoy listening to you. Now it's been a long time. I won't try and stay away so long. But with the Phillies, a lot of people say managers don't make a difference. I've already asked Brother Joe Stace. I want to get your answer. What do you, Coach Girardi being there, how many more wins do you think that'll be versus Kappa? Once again, Brother Joe, listen to the answer. Peace. God bless to you, man.
Scott, thanks, man. Same to you. I would say no fewer than 5 and no more than like 8. I know it sounds ridiculous.
That's a lot.
That's a lot of wins. Like 5's a lot of wins. I am one of the people that says the manager doesn't make a massive difference. But I do think that there are some things, like, I don't think undermanaging crushes you. I do think that overmanaging crushes you, and I think that that was something that Gabe Kapler was a victim of. It's not that I think that Joe Girardi is such an amazing manager that he's a five-game improvement. I think that it's possible that Gabe Kapler, through tinkering, pooped away five games that he shouldn't have you know, done that to. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think that is fair. My issue isn't the Phillies. Well, it is the Phillies. I've got a massive issue with the team. But my issue isn't entirely the Phillies. I think my issue is more so the rest of the National League, and I know that they're, like, Pat Egan and I talked about this the other day. He's not high on a couple teams that I'm high on.
Okay.
I think that there are five legitimate teams that are definitely, but that are better than the Phillies. You know, obviously the Dodgers and the Braves, for sure.
Yep.
I think the Cardinals are better than them. I also still think the Nationals are better than them.
I would have bet that you were going to still say the Nationals.
And
I agree.
I am not convinced that the Cincinnati Reds or the San Diego Padres will not be better than them.
Okay. We do part ways there. I think I like the Phillies more than I like those two teams. But I'm in agreement with you on
that. I like the pitching. I mean, I'm such a pitching-driven guy. Like, for not having ever been a pitcher, I am so pitching-driven when it comes to who's going to win championships.
All about it. Well, I mean, you've seen typically last several years, teams that have had the best pitch, not necessarily the best pitchers, but the best pitching performances have won the World Series, right? Like, you've seen enough of a track record now where you're like, all right, I feel good about putting it out that way.
All you got to do is get that one guy.
That's it, man.
You know, Bumgarner did it. It's, you know, you date back, everybody's done it once.
Yeah.
That's all you need is once.
Verlander has done it. Certainly Scherzer has done it.
Yep.
Got to find that guy.
Corbin was good, too.
No, I mean, he sure was. Not worth the money, probably, you know.
No, I wouldn't have spent that money. No, you got to stay under the cap. Stay under the luxury tax. Come on.
Oh, man. Want to learn how to be a real player in the esports world? Come out to Nerd Street tomorrow from 4 to 6 p.m. for the Path to Pro Pep Rally. If you're a fan of the Overwatch League and you think you or your kids have what it takes to be a gaming pro, this is the event for you. You have a chance to meet some esports executives from Nerd Street, World Gaming Network, and even some players from the Houston Outlaws and Philadelphia Fusion. That's the Path to Pro Pep Rally tomorrow from 4 to 6 p.m. at Nerd Street, 908 North 3rd Street in Northern Liberties. This event is free. See you there.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.